On March 16, 2000, two sheriff's deputies were shot in Atlanta. Jameel Al-Amin, a Muslim leader and former Black Power activist, was convicted. But the evidence was shaky, and the whole truth didn't come out during the trial. My name is Mosi Secret, and when I started investigating this case in my hometown, I uncovered a dark truth about America. From Tenderfoot TV, Campside Media, and iHeart Podcasts, Radical is available now. Listen to the new podcast, Radical, for free on the iHeart Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Did this prank, me and Rel, where our penises are stuck in a Chinese finger trap. And we went into this barbershop in the hood in Atlanta, and we walked in the barbershop, our dicks are in a Chinese finger trap, and we're stretching them back and forth. And we went to the barber. We're like, yo, our dicks are stuck in this thing. Can you give us your scissors to cut us out? And the guy went red. He was like, oh, hell no! And he started looking for his gun. Couldn't find his gun, found a knife, chased us out with a knife. We're stuck at the dick in this thing, like, oh! Runs after us, and my safe word is popcorn. When I call popcorn, that means like, yep, it's time to cut. This is too dangerous. But I had so much adrenaline, I forgot my safe word, and I just started yelling goosebumps. So I'm looking at my crew who's hidden in cars, and like they have backpack cameras and all these. Like, I'm like, goosebumps, goosebumps, goosebumps. And they're like, oh, fuck, popcorn. And like security jumped out, grabbed the guy's knife, yell cut. We reveal the dick trap snaps. Rel's like falling down, rolled under a car. And like the guy, we were like, it's a hidden camera prank. It's a hidden camera prank. And the guy was like, oh, y'all are hilarious, man. When's this shit come out? I'll sign a release. No problem.
Eric Andre is crazy. He's an amazing comedian who's brilliant and childish. I love the Eric Andre Show so much, especially those crazy interviews where he just screws with people and destroys the set and attacks every convention of the American talk show. I also loved his hilarious new Netflix special, Legalize Everything, and I can't wait for his upcoming prank movie, Bad Trip. Let's get into it. It's Eric Andre on Touré Show.
You know, one thing I love about you, and especially, you know, doing a deep dive on the show, which is so amazing, you are not scared of insulting people. These people come on, they don't know what you're doing. Yeah. I feel like if I ask somebody a question that bothers them, they're going to be like, oh, I don't like that guy. I'm mad at that guy.
Oh, right.
You don't care.
Well, I'm not out to hurt anybody. There's no malicious intent. And
right,
I'm in
you don't hurt, right, you don't hurt anybody.
Yeah, I'm in character while I'm doing the show. So the character of the show host is like an idiot. So I'm wearing a mask in a sense, much like the woman that walked by in the frame behind you.
When
she wore a mask. She wore a literal mask. I'm wearing a metaphoric mask on my show. So I hope nobody takes it personal. I'm just fucking around.
No, I don't think anybody takes it personal, but like, you know, you're pushing the envelope, you're pushing people's buttons. Yeah. And, you know, I'm like, you know, I don't want them to be upset. I don't want you to be upset, you know? And like,
I'm like you in this situation or a situation where I'm not in character. I'm very like, oh, if I send a text message, this is how like needy and weird and pathetic I am. If I send a text message to anybody and they don't respond in 5 minutes, I'm like, they're mad at me. They fucking hate me.
Totally.
Fucking hate me.
Totally.
I must have said something insulting.
What did I say?
I texted Jon Favreau 2 days ago. I go, because we have a mutual friend, and I go, I heard you have a good brisket recipe because I want to make a brisket. He didn't respond. My world crumbled. I was like, I fucked up on The Lion King. He thinks I'm a hack. I went, like, I spiraled. I was like, I'll never be in Iron Man 5.
Because I feel like you seem fearless. Is that like...
I'm pretty anxious. No, it's the opposite. A lot of people say, I just want to get some hand sanitizer. I'm just trying to walk. I know it's like nauseating for the viewers. People get seasick when I walk. I'm actually pretty anxious. I just know that in those situations, those high-stakes situations, like there's comedy in those hills. That's how I feel. So like I'm miserable while we're filming a times plural. So Yeah. But I know in the editing bay, pain during shooting is pleasure in the editing bay.
Yeah.
So I have to sacrifice my comfort in those moments to get good footage.
So even when you're in the midst of it, you're feeling the pain. You're not like, I'm fearless. Like the stage me is fearless.
I got better season after season, but it is like, it's pretty nerve wracking, especially when people are like attacking you or taking out weapons, or you're surrounded by like bikers for Trump and you're trying to troll Alex Jones.
I showed the show to my kids who are 12 and 11, and they kept saying, why does he keep destroying the desk? And they kept coming back to that. And I tried to explain like the desk as a symbol of like normalcy in 99% of shows. And your show is unpredictable and it's an anti-show. And yeah. So destroying the desk is a sense of like, we are attacking the normal paradigms of doing these shows. They didn't really understand that, but I mean, like,
you got too deep, you went over their heads.
But I mean, like, you love to destroy your set and then immediately put it right back together.
Yes, because my character's trapped in purgatory, so it's just this, like,
you can't get out.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, he's trapped. He's trapped in this. What's the word besides purgatory? It's just, it's this existential, it's Groundhog's Day. Groundhog's Day, I think, is better.
You know what kills me is when you shoot people, when you shoot your stage manager, when you shoot the hell out of Hannibal, it just makes me die laughing. and I can't even control it, but like, why is that funny?
I, because it's like, the wrong, absolute wrong thing to do. And I think, like, you know, comedy is when you inject absurdity, when you distort the truth. So it's like the last thing that would happen on a talk show. It's like every choice we make is like the, if I was an actual talk show host, the worst choice over and over and over and over again. It is like a show of just like bad choices. Like the editing choices are like intentionally wrong. Like, my questions are completely inappropriate. I'm completely inept. It's like the talk show is one of the oldest like templates for like since the dawn of television in the 40s. You had Steve Allen show. It's one of the oldest templates for a television show. So it's like everybody's familiar with it across the world. So it's the easiest one to kind of dismantle.
Deconstruct. What happened after Hannibal kicked Flavor Flav in the face?
We cut to commercial and we came back and he was dancing.
On the set, he kicked Flavor Flav with his knee to the face. Yeah. What happened?
I mean, it got crazy. He took it like a champion.
He did.
You know what? I can't, I'd rather keep the mystery alive, be honest with you.
Because in my mind, he got really mad and he was like, fuck you guys.
He's bad. He still is bad. And I bring it up. We're doing a new season. We're doing a fifth season. And I bring it up with another guest. And like my writing partner was like, you're rehashing that. Like you're bringing that back up and putting it back out there. But, yeah. I'll keep that one a mystery.
So look,
where are you? Are you in New York?
Yeah, I'm in Brooklyn. Yeah.
Is this your house? Is this your apartment? House?
Yeah.
Brownstone, whatever. I like your book collection.
Thank you. It's a couple of books. We try to, you know.
Very literate.
We try.
Be friends with Jordan Carlos.
Yes, he's a good man. He's a good man. I see Wyatt Snack a lot. He's
a good friend. He's a good man.
A lot of comics are in and around here. Chris Rock used to live around the corner from here. Now he's
like, you have all the black comedians on your block.
It's all coming. So what's the difference between the real Eric Andre and the guy who goes on, the character you play on stage, not just in the show, but also in Legalize Everything and like, he's not the same guy, is it?
I would say I'm a lot more suburban and boring and hardworking. And I'm like anxious and work obsessed and like I'm kind of a drip. I don't know. I like eat healthy and shit and exercise.
I feel like hanging out with you would be like just a breathless just crawl of just craziness happening one after the other. I can't keep up with this.
I kind of get it all out of my system on stage or in front of the cameras. I used to have that much energy and hyperactivity, but like I kind of get it out in my performance, and then I spend my private life trying to like calm my anxiety. I meditate. I got a jacuzzi at my house. You know, I try to go to sauna. I'm like, one half is black, but the other half is very Jewish. Right. So I have to do everything to calm my anxiety.
Well, you know, just this year, I found out that I'm like part Jewish.
Really? Okay.
I didn't know that until it was like my sister did a 23andMe to be like, we're like a third Jewish.
I can see you got a little Andy Samberg kind of.
Yo.
Let you got a little Eric Andre face going on.
Totally. Samberg is a whole thing because people used to tell me I looked like him. I'm like, I don't see it. And they would tell me that I sound like him. And I'm like, I don't see it. And then I went to an Al Gore book party and his uncle was there. And he made like a beeline across the room like, yo, dude, we tease Andy about sounding like you all the time.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, like Andy actually like hears like.
I sound like Seth Rogen. And yes. I look like yes. You. When my hair was growing out, my mom's coworker thought I was J. Cole. I got Ray Allen for like a year and Andy Samberg.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So do you like Andy Kaufman?
I love Andy Kaufman. I have a framed look up. I have a book of his hate mail, which I lost, and I'm trying to find it because I want to read it. And then I have this is on my piano in my house. I don't know if you can see it. Randy Kaufman.
Perfect.
Yeah, when I first started Eric Andre's show, I met with a spiritual advisor. Uh-huh. And I'm like not spiritual at all. I am like the biggest skeptic. But I met with a spiritual advisor and she said, you have to pray before you start your journey on your own talk show. You have to pray to the comedy gods. Okay. And me and her like prayed to the comedy gods together. So I closed my eyes and I think Joan Rivers just died. It was like, I prayed to like Joan Rivers and George Carlin and Lenny Bruce and Richard Pryor and Andy Kaufman. And we like did this little like prayer to the comedy gods. And, so then I like framed a couple. I have like a Richard Pryor frame somewhere in my house.
I mean, who are the fathers, like the comedy fathers of the absurdist, brilliant, crazy Eric Andre shit?
And
like,
mothers. Oh, I grew up on
absolutely
Phyllis Diller. I love George Carlin, Richard Pryor. Are you talking about the dead ones or people that are alive?
Both of them. Who are the main influences that lead you to do the crazy shit that like throws us off?
The living one. I love all the Jackass guys. I love Sacha Baron Cohen, Tom Green. Those guys were the first people that I was like, oh, these guys are like risking their life for like a dumb joke, like being chased with like a hammer or a knife. They're like getting like assaulted by bulls and pythons, like, just for our entertainment. And it was like this, like, I don't know. It feels like very like altruistic. It's not because they're millionaires, but I felt like they were like sacrificing their comfort and well-being just for a laugh. I don't know. And I thought they were so high stakes, you know?
I mean,
Borat movie was the hardest I ever laughed in a movie theater.
Okay.
When I saw Borat the first time, I couldn't believe my eyes. So,
I mean, it definitely.
Those are the. I love Ren and Stimpy. I love Wonder Shows In. I love Chappelle's Show.
Yeah.
I love The Simpsons. A lot of animated stuff. Beavis and Butthead. I love Chris Rock stand up, Chris Tucker stand up. These guys are great for me.
I mean, Borat had me going, how much of this is real and how much is not? And I don't know where the line is. And that discomfort made me happy because I'm like, you're making me like really, really think and work and try to figure out like what's what. And you kind of fuck with that. And you kind of seem like, I'm fucking around up here. I don't care if you laugh or not. I'm doing my crazy shit.
I mean, you know, I was so broke when I sold the Eric Andre show. I was on unemployment and I had like $200 in my name. So I'm like, I don't care if you don't laugh. I have a job. Like, do you know how incredible that is? I have a fucking job. I was like broke for the first 10 years of comedy. So, I mean, what can I, this is all I got.
So you're doing good now.
I'm doing okay now.
How good are you doing now?
I'm doing better than when I was 23. And I would like eat at like there's a deli. It's called the Punjabi Deli. It's on First and First. It's where it's pre Uber. So when I lived in New York, it was where all the cab drivers would eat. And it was $2 microwaved Indian food. And I would eat there. It probably has no nutritional value. They like just microwave the shit out of it. They would microwave it in styrofoam. And I would eat there every day. And I would eat falafels in the West Village because it was like the only meal that I could get for $2. I was doing like chicken shit open mic comedy.
Heard you talk about you don't care about money. Like, that's not like you don't really not care about money.
I don't. Did I say that? No. I mean, like, money's fucking rad. You can buy shit. I mean, when did I say that? What kind of hippie bullshit is that? I bought a house. Get the fuck out of here.
Where are you living?
I live in Los Angeles.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. In LA on the East Side. Where are you, Bed-Stuy?
Fort Greene.
Fort Greene. Love Fort Greene.
Fort Greene.
Fort Greene. Oh, yeah. Chris Rock had a – he bought that place – like, he told me he bought that place right with his, like, first paycheck, like a $3,000 SNL paycheck, something like that. Because Fort Greene was, like, rough when he bought it.
It was.
He's like, you don't know my Fort Greene. He goes, you have your Fort Greene.
No, now it's really super smooth. Is there...
Did you grow up in New York?
No, I grew up in Boston.
Boston, fucking hey, dude. You ever go to the Dunkin' Donuts and fucking Alewife, bro? Dude, you ever fall asleep on the T and you wake up in fucking Braintree, bro?
I grew up right next to Braintree. It's called a town called Randolph.
Braintree. What a fucked name for a city. Braintree.
Tell me about it. So.
Wow, you both, like, Boston is the most racist city in the North. It has to be,
well,
right?
You know, in the North,
like,
yes.
I'm like, am I in Alabama? I went to college there, and it was like the Alabama.
Where'd you go to school?
Berklee College of Waste Your Money Music.
Right. You didn't learn. I know exactly where that is. You didn't learn. Great. What did you study? What was your instrument?
Upright bass.
And you didn't feel like you learned important.
I learned
about music.
Cool jazz bass lines, daddy-o.
Don't give a do,
yeah, man. Read
You're
a little
so Pittsburgh. Punk. I'm surprised to hear you even talk about jazz because you do seem very bad brainsy and punk and like.
But jazz can be punk, you know, like Ornette Coleman, Albert Eiler, all those guys that were making that, like, and like Miles's fusion stage, all that
yes,
like
yes.
60s, 70s jazz that was fucking super avant-garde is punk rock. And I still wolf that stuff down.
No, Bitches Brew is one of my favorite albums.
Brew,
of all
Live
time.
Evil, yeah, all that shit.
Yo, what you do at the end of Legalize Everything, and I don't know how far you want to go in terms of protecting it if people haven't seen it.
Nah, I think like tease it out.
Blew my mind. And I don't normally find that shit funny. And I was just like,
you're talking about when I FaceTime the mom or my mangina?
The mangina.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like they
I went the out with an exclamation point.
The director sets it up perfectly, like when you like the behind shot when you pull up your shirt and I'm like, where is this going? And then like the face, the mangina, it's like, oh my God, this guy
you gotta
is
give
fucking
the people
insane.
What they want. Yeah,
what are you doing there?
Well, is it blurred? I can't remember if we blurred it. It's blurred.
Yeah. Well, we don't see your whole thing, but we see the hair.
You see the hair. Okay, so Adult Swim, you have to blur the hair. So I'm making progress. I'm now the hair is unblurred, but the fruit basket in the back, that had to be blurred, I think, for Netflix's standards and practices. But Yeah, I'm taking it one piece of my genitalia at the time. Then I want the next movie I want to put out, I want it rated X. That's my goal.
Why do you do that?
You know what? That on stage, I wasn't going to put that in the edit at first. Every single show I did last year, people shout out, show your dick, get naked. Men and women scream at me to get naked all throughout my show. Every city internationally, it's like I'm the naked guy now. So I wasn't going to put it in the special, but it just like my editor just like put that in at the very end. And we just thought it was so stupid and funny. And the crowd reaction was so good that it was just like this, like, fuck you to go out on. I don't know. You got to give the people what they want. People want to see my crotch for some reason. At first, it was me egging it on. Now people are like, you get naked? Fucking keep getting naked. I'm like, all right.
I'll do it.
The
piece with the mom is dope because it goes in a direction you don't expect her to be so fucking cool, right? You're trying to get her goat, and she's like, "I got weed if you want it."
Oh yeah, the mom and the mom. I did that joke over and over again in each city, and the mom is always the star of the show in that bit. But that mom especially was cool and brought up weed organically and tied in the themes from the whole special and like tied the beginning to the end. Like, that was serendipity. That was incredible.
What are you scared to do in terms of your career?
I don't like scuba diving. I wouldn't film underwater. I don't have sharks and shit down there.
If I was in your writer's room, what is it that I could say outside of let's scuba dive? Like, you know, Eric doesn't like scuba diving. Okay, fine. Well, what can I say? Like, let's do this. You'd be like, okay, I'm not doing that.
I think there's good, bad taste and there's bad taste. And I think there's no real, like, never say this or don't talk about this topic. Like, everything's on the table. It just depends on the joke and the scenario and the situation and the point of view of the joke. And you kind of have to take it case by case. But if all the writers are dying laughing, that's a good sign. You know what I mean? Because the people I have in the room are very, very smart people, much smarter than me, that I trust. So, I don't know. It's case by case. You got to figure it out. Sometimes you fuck it up. Sometimes I put out plenty of shit that's just in poor taste that I just have to like live with it out there. So,
I mean, the way that you are, it doesn't matter if you're in poor taste. Who cares? I'm Eric Andre. I freaking burn bridges and keep it going.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. We'll see how long it lasts. I mean, I think you gotta be, you never want to be like mean or unlikable. You don't want it to just be like harsh for harsh's sake, you know? Right. So it's gotta be funny. So I think you just gotta keep that in mind with each joke.
I mean, a lot of times the joke is on you. Right. So then if you're the big fool in the prank or the joke, then like you do whatever you want.
Right. I'm always playing the idiot. So I'm not out to get anybody. You know what I mean? So, it was very much like that for the prank movie we just did. All the pranks like showed the good humanitarian nature in people versus like making people look dumb or punching down or Nick,
this
you know,
is,
all
this
the
is bad trip.
This is bad trip. Yeah, I'll send you, I'll have them send you a link
with Tiffany Haddish,
Lil Rel Howery, Michaela Conlon, and that's it. The rest, everybody else on camera is a real civilian.
Is it like Borat in that?
Yes, it's a narrative movie told entirely with hidden camera pranks with real people. Real civilian. We don't know fake reactions. Nobody's pretending. There's only four actors in it, and then everybody else is it.
Can you say what the premise is?
Yeah, it's basically hidden camera Dumb and Dumber. It's Borat meets Dumb and Dumber. It's like me and Rel are best friends. I see the girl of my dreams. Turns out she lives thousands of miles away. We steal his convict psychotic sister's car, who is played by Tiffany Haddish. We steal her car. We drive across country, and we create pranks all along the way, but we tell that entire story through pranks. So we never stop down to tell a story, then go to a prank, stop down to tell a story, then do a prank. The story and the pranks are interwoven, and we're actually we're getting plot points from real people who don't even know they're on camera. So it is experimental.
What's the hit when you're doing it, when you're doing Bad Trip, what's the hit to miss ratio? Like, how much are we seeing on screen versus, like, you know, we did it, we tried something, we threw that out, we tried something, that one worked, we tried something, we threw that out, like...
Oh, you got to film a lot. You got to film a lot. You got to film, like, really 90% of what you film is on the cutting room floor. And, like, it's just, like, the cream at the top that makes it.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
It's a, how long did it take to film it?
3.5 years. And we started working on it 6.5 years ago.
Three and a half years.
Shit. Well, not entirely shooting every day for 3.5 years. It was, like, on and off. And then... Rel got a Fox show, and then we had to wait for his show to end to do the reshoots, and Tiffany's schedule was crazy. So yeah, it was like, I mean, like, it was like a lot of like filming, editing, watching it, seeing what we fucked up, went back, filmed, edited, seeing what we fucked up, what we needed. It was a lot of like repeating the process over and over again.
I mean, in the last 3 to 4 years, Tiffany has gone from a star to a massive star.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, yeah, I'm shocked you could even get her on the phone at this point.
Well, we had to. Well, me, Rel and I have been friends with her since she was like sleeping in her car. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've known her
for
like 15 years. So I'm sure Rel might have known her longer. But she, the only reason, so, and it, that was pennies from heaven, that casting. What happened was Rel, the first day of filming, we did this prank, me and Rel, and Rel's never done hidden camera pranks before. They're incredibly stressful. So we did this prank, me and Rel, where our penises are stuck in a Chinese finger trap. And we went into this barbershop in the hood in Atlanta. And we walked in the barbershop, our dicks are in a Chinese finger trap, and we're stretching them back and forth. And we went to the barber. We're like, yo, our dicks are stuck in this thing. Can you give us your scissors to cut us out? And the guy went red. He was like, oh, hell no. And he started looking for his gun. Couldn't find his gun, found a knife, chased us out with a knife. We're stuck at the dick in this thing, like, runs after us. And my safe word is popcorn. When I call popcorn, that means like, yep, it's time to cut. This is too dangerous. But I had so much adrenaline, I forgot my safe word and I just started yelling goosebumps. So I'm looking at my crew who's hidden in cars and like they have backpack cameras and all these. Like, I'm like, goosebumps, goosebumps, goosebumps. And I'm like, oh, fuck, popcorn. And like security jumped out, grabbed the guy's knife. We yell cut, reveal, the dick trap snaps, Rel's like falling down, rolled under a car. And like the guy, we were like, it's a hidden camera prank, it's a hidden camera prank. And the guy was like, oh, y'all are hilarious, man. When's this shit come out? I'll sign a release, no problem. And then Rel was pit. He was like, dude, you're gonna get me killed. This is fucking dangerous. I got kids. And he was like, he was about to quit. He called Tiffany Haddish. She's like, I'm doing Eric's movie. It's a nightmare. I almost got killed today. And Tiffany's like dying laughing as he's telling the story. He's like near tears. And then she called me 5 minutes afterwards and she goes, yo, you almost got Rel killed shooting your movie? And I was like, yeah. And she goes, yo, I want to be in your movie. I was like, what? And the woman that was set to play her role just dropped out. So we were looking for somebody new. And then she just came out of nowhere. And she was famous, so we're like, how do we get away with pranks? So we just disguised her. We gave her face tattoos and cornrows, and we like changed up her look entirely. And we got away with it. And she was incredible. She's like a prank. She's like comedy on a cellular level. She can do every medium of comedy, stand-up, acting, pranks, like you name it.
So wait, what else happened in terms of like almost getting killed in the making of this piece?
That was one of the worst, for sure. I almost got a bottle smacked over my head at a bar for like urinating on a pool table at this like country like honky tonk bar with like this real redneck dude that did not think I was funny at all. And he's like, "You get your I don't care where you piss, but you need to get your piss away from me." And I'm like peeing towards him, and it was like a pee gag. It wasn't my real.
Michelle Obama is one of the most inspiring, intelligent, graceful, unapologetically black people that I could think of. Just her existing makes me happy, makes me feel inspired, makes me want to be a little bit more like her every day, because she seems to be just this extraordinary person.
So if there's any sort of podcast about her, I want to listen to that. Life Kit from NPR has a whole episode on Michelle Obama. It's part of their whole Black Stories, Black Truths collection, where you'll hear stories of Black joy, Black resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account of what it means to be Black today from a unique Black perspective. There's a Code Switch episode about Dr. King, and I love Code Switch. There's It's Been a Minute about Eric Andre, who I love. We are not the same person, even though a lot of people think we look alike, even though he lives in my neighborhood now. But stop telling him he looks like me. Stop telling me I look like him. There's a Pop Culture Happy Hour about the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I loved that show. That show meant so much to me. This is what Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR is all about. Stories about Black America and Black culture. Whole Pop Culture Happy Hour on Abbott Elementary, which is another amazing modern Black show. From Megan Thee Stallion to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, to the women behind the Montgomery bus boycott, to the Color Purple, the stories of Black Stories, Black Truths will take you inside the Black community and Black culture. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts. Great Expectations is a new novel from the New Yorker staff writer Vincent Cunningham. A keenly observed novel about a young Black man searching for his place in the world amidst a moment of historic change. Great Expectations is about the main character David's 18 months working for Senator Obama's 2008 presidential campaign. Along the way, David meets all sorts of people who raise questions about history, art, race, religion, and fatherhood that force David to look at his life in a new way and come to terms with his identity as a young Black man in America. Colm McCann says Great Expectations will be one of the most talked about novels of the year. And others have called this book epic, intimate, and brimming with brilliance. It got a starred review in Publishers Weekly, which is a big deal. And it's a coming-of-age story that takes you inside the Obama campaign like nothing else. Great Expectations is an extraordinary book available wherever books are sold.
Influencer. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot these days. There is a woman who went the distance, who broke ground as the first true influencer by living a remarkable life. Her name, Elizabeth Taylor. I'm Katy Perry. This is the story of the original influencer. This is Elizabeth the First.
Elizabeth the First, the podcast, wherever you listen.
Dick, but he couldn't tell. It was just like this little hose of shooting fake piss out of the thing. And it was like an astronomical amount of piss. I had like these two bladders filled with fake piss under my arm. So I'm like spraying it all over the bar. And he's fucking, he went, all right, that's it. Did a shot of Jim Beam or something, grabbed a bottle. And I was like, popcorn, goosebumps. Yeah. Oh, and then I was pissed at myself. I was like, man, maybe I should have let him break a bottle over my face. And my Jeff Tremaine, the guy that directs all the Jackass movies, he's the producer on it. He goes, you don't want to get a bottle broken up your face. He's like, we want to be able to film the rest of the movie if you had stitches.
You'd be cut up.
You'd be staples in your face. So,
but you're willing to go the nth degree to get the joke.
Well, you know, I feel like Johnny Knoxville, Sacha Baron Cohen, these guys have set the bar so high that if you don't literally put your life in danger, you can't compete with those guys. Those guys are like the masters, you know what I mean? All the Jackass guys and Sasha. So like, that's what I'm dealing with. I'm like, dude, I'm trying to put the stuff out after those guys have set the bar astronomically high. So I'm like, I don't do it out of pleasure. I do it out of like, what else can I do? Like, that's the competition. So.
I mean, I imagine you as somebody who's like, I don't have safe words. you know, but you...
I used to not. Oh, we used to do things illegally, no security, no stunt pads. I would do stunts on concrete and wipe out and end up in the hospital. And I bashed my hand through a window one time and sliced my hand up. We were idiots. I got arrested two times shooting Eric Andre's show. Like, we were idiots. We had no idea how to produce this stuff. We were just going into situations blind. It was so dangerous in the beginning. Then we kind of figured out like what's like reasonable danger and what you can get away with and what you can't. Like, you want to break the right rules and not break the wrong.
In terms of doing the Eric Andre show, so what's the most danger in terms of the interviews? What is the most dangerous moment that you've had?
The interview's not dangerous. I mean, T.I. walked out, he had had enough, and then
he walked out three times.
Yeah, he kept like getting up, and I'd have to like call him back, and then I'd piss him off again, and he left. And he didn't really have a sense of humor about it. And then he like, looked around afterwards for a while. I was like, is T.I. gonna beat me up? What's her name? Lauren Conrad walked out, but I never felt danger in the studio.
That was amazing. The Lauren Conrad moment was amazing. Yeah. And you know, I showed it to my wife and she had the same reaction that Lauren did in terms when you throw up, and she cringed just like she was like mirroring Lauren. And then when you ate it, she was like, I'm done. And she's like walking up. I'm like, you're mirroring Lauren. It's amazing. That moment is amazing.
That's a primal reaction. That's fair. That's fair.
How did you not get beat up by T.I.? Because I know he goes to that place.
I think he was considering it. I kept seeing him. Usually after an interview, they just get in their car and get the fuck out of there. But he lurked around afterwards. And I was just like, after I get the footage I need, I'm like chummy and friendly. And I was just like, hey man, that was great. Every time I walk by him, like walking into my office, I'd be like, hey, that was great. Oh man, thanks for coming. And he was just like, yeah, yeah. And I was like, ah man, you're crazy. Woo, love your music. Woo. I was just like super positive afterward. It is psychological torture. I'm like making them completely lose their mind, and then afterwards I'm like, man, you were so great, so much fun working with you, and da, da, da.
I mean, how often do you get the publicist calling like, what the fuck was that? We didn't expect that. We're upset.
That happens constantly, but I let my producer deal with it. The best was we interviewed Robin Givens this season, and you know, I have like cockroaches coming from the ceiling and maggots crawling out of the desk and the food and stuff like that. She's like losing her mind. I had an alligator on a skateboard. She's losing her mind. She had no idea what the show was. She's panicking. I like brought up Mike Tyson. And then like, turns out later I found this out. My first AD or second AD was like, dude, her agent is flipping out and trying to end the interview. And my ADs just were sending the agent out on like a wild goose chase. They're like, I think the way to the studio is that way. And then they'd send her in a living room. No, it's that way. No, it's that way. Oh, shit. Wait, where are you trying to go? Oh, talk to him. Oh, talk to her. And like sending them all around. And then when they all cut, she came out. I was like, I think your agent was pissed or something. And she's like, I'm the pissed agent. And rah, 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 rah. I was like, all right, well, see you later. We got the footage. You signed the release ahead of time. Bye-bye. She was fucking... Robin Givens was cool afterwards. She was stressed during it, but she was cool afterwards.
So who... I know season five it is?
Yeah, we're on the fifth season, yeah.
It's almost done, right?
Yeah, we're finishing editing next week, so filmed everything.
Who's the one that you're like, I cannot wait for you to see me in this one because it goes completely off the rails?
Omarion from You Got Served is one of the best interviews of the entire series.
Okay.
it's incredible.
Say anything that happens.
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know how to say it without ruining it, but he didn't like walk up, but he had had enough. We offered him sushi, and we rolled out this like naked Japanese woman with sushi all over her body. And then I was like, no, you don't look like a sushi guy. You look like a chili guy. And we wheeled her away and we brought out this naked guy who's a fake George Clooney with dripping chili all over his naked body. And we handed Omarion a ladle. You're like, you want some chili? I mean, like, it's healthy. It's organic. And yeah, I don't know. I don't want to say too much. I feel like I won't do it justice, by the
Tell
way.
Tell me about the grizzly bear.
Grizzly bear was cool.
I mean, the bear, it's like the bear came works. Out and ambled over to the desk and you were like, fuck this, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Those are simpler times. Those are simpler days. Grizzly bear.
Like, but,
the bear was cool. Bears are cool. Bears are cool unless you sneak up on them.
Yeah, but you were shook, as you should have been.
Yeah, it's a fucking bear. It's just kill you.
You could just you're fucking like, snap.
You're like a mosquito compared to, it's like mosquitoes talking to me.
Let me give some props to fucking Hannibal because he's one of the great comedians of today. And he's such a great, like, peanut butter to your jelly.
Yes. Because,
like, you play stupid, but I know that you're really smart, which right. allows me to love the character you're playing. He's just like, I'm like, he's your really smart friend who's kind of like, what the fuck is going on here? And, like, it's just such a brilliant sort of, like, a perfect combination.
Yeah, he's a great straight man. I think, like, Chris Rock has the best quote. He called me up. I never met him, and he called me between season 2 and 3, and he was like, I love your show. I want to do your show. The reason your show works is because there's no two black guys on earth that have less in common than you and Hannibal Buress. So he's, like, the perfect straight man, and he's also, like, he also is psycho. So, like, he's the straight man when it's just me and him, and then you think he's a straight man during the interview, but then he's like completely unpredictable. Everything out of his mouth is a complete non sequitur. You have no idea what he's thinking.
Yo, so can you shed some light on this one point that Hannibal is historic now in terms of what he did to Bill Cosby, that he started that avalanche that led to him righteously being in prison and having his name ruined and all that sort of stuff. How does he feel about that?
I think he feels a weird burden about it because it's not clear to everybody. There's cognitive dissonance with Bill Cosby fans, and he had millions of fans. You know what I mean? There's still people that like don't deny it. I mean, it's like impossible to deny it, but like, at first, black people were mad at Hannibal.
Yes.
Black people were mad at Hannibal. So he would go into like a black club or something like that and feel tense because he felt like he ratted out this like black icon.
Yes.
But as time goes by, I mean, Bill Cosby's like Jeffrey fucking Dahmer, dude. Like 52 women came forward. That means like it's probably 520 right. women. You know what I mean? For every right. one woman that came forward, right. there's probably 10 that didn't come forward. So right. the guy was like fucking John Wayne Gacy. He's like a serial killer. But
I mean,
I don't know. I think he's sick of talking about it too. There's just sure. like, I think it's come up in every interview for the past 6 years. And he's like that. He doesn't want that to be his legacy. He wants his material and his jokes to speak for themselves.
Oh,
so
of
I
course.
Think it feels like,
I felt the, when you talk about black audiences being mad at him, because I used to do this college lecture about race and racism where I would open telling this Hannibal joke, and I gave him credit. I didn't steal it, but the joke about, you know, how orange juice, how he loves to make orange juice, and they see all the orange juice in the store, and the guy behind them is like, you know, why'd you buy all the orange juice? And he's like, you know, you can go get your own orange juice, and then, you know, he's like, I was, for a moment, I was so happy about the orange juice that I was in a world where the guy was mad at me for buying all the orange juice and not because my girlfriend is white. And then I make a point about racism and like living in a world where you don't focus on what white people are thinking and saying about us. But there was definitely colleges where I'm like, you know, there's this joke by Hannibal Buress that like really sets up what I want to say about race. And people would kind of like a third of the audience would kind of groan. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? You're groaning about Hannibal fucking Buress telling the fucking truth? Are you fucking kidding me?
So where were those colleges? Who were the what race were the groaners?
And black.
What state were you in?
Definitely Midwestern, definitely Midwestern black, maybe Southern black, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I mean, race is forever touchy, right? We have a collective PTSD, yes. And we're a traumatized nation. You know what I mean? And those wounds may never heal. So I think, like, with every, you can't win them all. I don't know. It's hard to talk about it objectively, or it's hard to have a perspective on it without pissing off somebody.
I mean, look, let's talk about you and how you feel about blackness. I know that you're half Jewish.
I'm actually getting surgery to become Filipino. I'm going to get head to toe. I talked to some pretty experimental doctors, and I'm changing my race.
I mean, there's no black way of doing comedy, but there is a black aesthetic. And I think you stand apart from that. And I feel like you're just doing your work and not sort of like trying to relate to some black aesthetic. Like, what do you think about that?
I think I'm from the suburbs. I think I'm from Boca Raton, Florida. But also, I think that your comedy, who no matter who you are, no matter what race you are, your comedy has to be authentic. Authenticity is key. It's more important than the jokes. If people don't believe your point of view and smell
that. We live in a world where you can get anything you need delivered to your door thanks to DoorDash. If you don't want to do the dishes or you feel a little sick, let DoorDash bring dinner tonight. My family uses DoorDash all the time because it connects us to our favorite restaurants without us having to drive. Last night, we got some Indian food for my wife, some gumbo for me, and sushi for the kids. And everyone was happy, and we didn't have to do the dishes. The process of ordering was quick and easy, and I love DoorDash for real. So I was so happy to do this for them because I'm a customer, because I know DoorDash is your door to more. Must be over 21 to order alcohol. Alcohol available only in select markets. DoorDash, your door to more. Download the DoorDash app now to get almost anything delivered. In my mind, the greatest author of the 20th century is Toni Morrison. And her greatest novel is Song of Solomon. A mesmerizing coming-of-age masterpiece that is gorgeously written and has captivated readers around the world. The protagonist, Milkman Dead, was born shortly after a neighborhood eccentric hurled himself off a roof in a vain attempt to fly. For the rest of his life, Milkman is trying to fly. As Morrison follows Milkman on a quest to uncover his roots and find the place of his family's origin, she introduces an entire cast of strivers and liars and assassins and the inhabitants of an amazing, beautiful, fully realized black world. The New Yorker said Morrison moves easily in and out of the lives and thoughts of her characters, luxuriating in the diversity of circumstances and personalities. Toni Morrison is a genius. She's one of the greatest writers of her time, of the century, and Song of Solomon is her greatest book, in my opinion. It's a must-read that will ignite your imagination and show you what the best possible fiction writing is like. And it's a timeless tale that will stay with you after you've turned its final page. When you get to the climax, you will feel it in your heart. Available now at tonimorrison.com or wherever books are sold.
That you're not being authentic. They're not gonna come with you. They don't even have to share your point of view. They just want you to have your own unique point of view. You know what I mean? Like, you're not gonna agree. Even your favorite comics, you're not gonna agree with every point they're making. But if they're interesting and they have a fascinating point of view, you kind of go along with them. So I have to be myself, and I have to, you know, I don't want to be somebody I'm not.
Yeah. No, I get a full, deep sense of authenticity from you and what you're doing. And
I also want to say, I think the problem with television and black roles on television are, like, a lot of the black roles I was auditioning for were clearly written by middle-aged white guys that have never met a black person.
Sure.
And black people are the most diverse creative people on earth. So sure. I wanted to have a television show that showed the diversity of Black people and not portray Black stereotypes like the McDonald's voiceover commercial auditions I was going in for in 2005. When I would have to audition for a voiceover for a McDonald's commercial, I'd be like, this new McRib sandwich showy is good, boss. And I'd be like, when the fuck did Al Jolson write this dialogue? This is fucking a mess. And I'd look at every other Black actor in the waiting room like, why? I wish we didn't have to do this for money. This is fucking humiliating. Like Frederick Douglass is rolling in his grave with each McDonald's voiceover commercial audition we have to do. So I just wanted to show the depth and diversity of Black performers on my show. I hope that.
I was thinking about something that you said that Chappelle told you when I was watching 846, which is you had said that Chappelle said, you don't have to be funny, you have to be interesting.
Yeah.
And your shit is always interesting and unpredictable.
Thank
whether
you.
Or not it's funny, I'm always like compelled. And that helped me understand 846 because it's not funny. It's not funny at all, except for like a moment here or there. But it is super interesting.
Compelling, yeah, 100%. You're on the hook the whole time. You're not even thinking like, man, this isn't funny, boo. You know what I mean? You're just like, you're fascinated by his point of view because he's got such a big brain that you want to know what his point of view is on every topic. And he's a historian, you know what I mean? I love that he takes you through the timeline in that set, you know? So he's just a fascinating, charismatic guy. I mean, there's a reason he's so successful.
I think he's the number one stand-up alive right now.
Yeah, he's state-of-the-art. Howard Stern goes, Dave Chappelle is state-of-the-art. That's the state-of-the-art of stand-up comedy. There's like that is 21st century comedy.
Do you have a top five if he's number one? Who, you know, you don't have to rank him if you don't want to insult people, but who's your top five?
Living?
Yeah, let's say living.
Right now, I love Amy Schumer. I love Chris Rock. I love Chappelle. I love Patton Oswalt. Gosh, who did I see recently? Judah Friedlander's special is like one of the hardest I've laughed at a stand-up special. Reggie Watts. Reggie Watts and Fred Armisen's specials were two of the most creative specials I've seen.
Fred Armisen's drummer special?
Yeah. Stand-up.
Really smart. Really smart.
And I went to music school, so I ate that shit up. That was that played directly to me. I like anybody that's like taking liberties with the genre and making their own kind of Rel's last special. I haven't seen Rel's most recent special, but the special that I saw before we started taping had me dying laughing. I love Tiffany Haddish. I love Hannibal. It's surreal that they're famous because I've been friends with them for 15 years, you know? So,
Is it surreal to you that you're famous?
I forget that I'm famous until I go outside every day. I don't think about that I'm on TV, and I feel like I never feel satisfied with where I'm at in my career. I'm always looking at the guy above me, and so I never think I'm famous until I'm like at the like Chili's to go at the airport, and then somebody's asking me for a selfie, and I'm like, oh shit, I'm on TV. What the fuck? That's so surreal.
Sorry,
I'm getting what did I order? Mole? One second. Hello. Oh yeah, you can come on up and just leave it on the table. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
I got some mole. I got like poblano peppers. I'm actually not making dip with it. I'm making like some experimental cocktails.
Okay.
There's a bartender whose name is Ivy Mix. She's in Carroll Gardens, I think.
Okay.
And I just bought her a book. Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah, you leave it right there. Thank you. I'm getting like kind of obscure ingredients for cocktails tonight. My girlfriend's making some brisket.
And, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You're begging me to ask, how long has this been?
How long has what been?
The relationship.
You know, we started hanging out last year, but I went on tour. So we really have only started spending full quality time with each other since January, because I wasn't in LA for like 6 months. I went on tour for like 6 months. You know?
That would... Look at this.
It's new. It's new.
There's lovely things going on outside here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I didn't want to be like those schmuck celebrities in that Imagine video. When like, imagine my backyard. Assholes.
God.
Tell
me something. Since you're making cocktails.
Yeah, I'm actually taking a month off drinking. I'm going to start drinking next Saturday.
Okay, but outside of weed, what are you doing? What do you do for drugs for real?
You know what? I talk about drugs so much in my special, and I don't do them as much as I used to. But like, I like mushrooms. I used to love MDMA, but I don't recover. I'm 37. I don't recover from MDMA like I used to. It is like a slow recovery process. But that used to be my favorite drug. Not crazy about K or Coke. I don't like anything in my nose. It's a bad way to ingest a drug. And I used to like acid, but it's like a long haul and it is strong. I'm kind of like aging out of it.
You're coming
I also
down.
Have so many just like stressors on my mind. Like you bring up like 9 different things while I'm on acid and I'll spiral.
MDMA is that the death drug?
No, that's Molly. You're thinking of DMT. You're
getting DMT.
Yeah, that okay. I haven't done. I have to.
Molly is the joyful. Have a good time. Love
Molly's
everybody.
Ecstasy. Molly is MDMA is the active ingredient in ecstasy.
No, I did that once with my wife when she's my girlfriend, and we decided to call our grandmothers.
Wow, what a choice. Why?
Because it's like, you know, you're in
why
like...
Why would you ever burden your grandmother with that?
Because you're in like the super sweetest place on MDMA, and like who's the sweetest person in your world is like your grandmother.
Yeah, I get that. I actually get that. And it was probably pleasant. Was it nice?
It was very pleasant. I'm sure that my grandmother was like, you're acting a little weird, but had no idea why.
I would get stoned out of my mind when I was a teenager and hang out with my grandma, and she wouldn't notice, and it would be pleasant. My parents, I'd be too nervous, or my sister, I'd be too nervous to be stoned in front of, but I could get stoned in front of my grandma, and she wouldn't really be, we would just like watch Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune, and it was cool. It was like, that was fine.
See, when I quit weed, but when I used to get high and occasionally in relatively recent years I would get stoned and I would be able to have really good conversations with my mom because you break down a bunch of barriers and now I can like really talk to you and like really like deal, you know, when I'm not stoned is, you know, like your masks are up, your barriers are up. It was it's interesting.
What about dad? What's going on with dad? You don't bring up dad. Is this
question? Not for any reason. I mean, my father passed away about two years ago, over 2 years ago.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, and he was sick for several years before that. So it's kind of like 5 years that he really did not exist as like a person I could really just talk
how
to.
Old, how old was he?
He was older. I mean, I think he was... He was definitely in his mid-80s. So
but you're closer to mom.
I was cool. Now you're making me admit shit publicly.
That's going to
fuck up my family.
I was closer
to him. Yeah, I know. Right? I was closer to him when he was here. You know, now it's just her and my sister. But I was definitely closer to him. So, you know, to see him
He's
sort of
fade
away.
He's not from Senegal. Nobody's from Senegal. Your parents are American.
Everybody's American. Everybody's American. She was just reading about somebody in Senegal.
I love Senegal.
So,
I love Senegal. Are you by Rue Dix? I don't know how to say it.
Am I by what?
There's a Senegalese restaurant in Brooklyn.
Yes. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. They might have closed. They might have closed before Corona on Fulton. Oh yes,
and by the clothes,
I'm pretty sure,
man.
I used to get the chicken from there, like when I was younger. But I think they've been gone for a minute. So wait, if I could see inside your mind, like what would it look like? What would it sound like? What would it be like?
Like an out of tune banjo player, just like bang, boom, bing, boom, bang, boing, bang, 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 and like Bugs Bunny cartoon sound effects. Garuga, garuga, ay, 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 ay.
You got a pretty good setup with, like, I got a consistent show, I got a relationship with Netflix, you know, I got a movie coming up that's also going to be on Netflix. So, you know, are you like mapping out a strategy, or you just sort of like, I had an idea, I executed on it, I have no idea what I'm going
to
do next.
I'm ready to retire, yeah, and move to the south of France and just make exotic cocktails. I'm hanging up the jersey.
I mean,
I got some more projects in mind, but I'm very superstitious. I don't like talking about stuff until it's happening, because that's when you jinx it. I don't know.
But you do have a general goal for where you want to be in 5 years?
I'd like to pay off my mortgage. I want to live abroad a little bit. I wouldn't mind spending a couple years of my life in Paris or something like that, just to get it out of my system. But career-wise or life-wise?
I meant career-wise, but I'm loving the life goals.
Career-wise, a continuation of the kind of work I'm doing now. I want to continue doing prank stuff. I'd want to continue doing animation. It's not really the medium. It's more like the project itself. I just want to keep creating.
I mean, I feel like, you know, like when we talk about drugs, you're like, I'm chilling out overall because, like, I'm getting older. Like, you know, you wonder, like, how long you continue on this road and you don't start to think, how do I transition into something that continues to fit with my personal growth as I continue to grow as a person?
I don't know. I don't think you can look at it too, like, theoretically. I think you have to be... One of the best things I ever heard was that art isn't intellectual. Art is primal. Mm. So, and I agree with comedy and the temporal arts. Like... I don't think you should overthink it. It's coming from, like, the animal parts of your mind, not your intellect. So it's coming from your emotions. And so I don't want to, like, I never like to think about things too theoretically or academically with comedy. I like to just, like, listen to my intuition and see what is making me laugh and getting me excited about creatively.
So what drives you?
Coffee, just a ton of coffee.
When you get out of bed and you think about, I got to keep pushing this rock up the hill and put out more Eric Andre, like what is the thing that you're like, I want people to say?
I don't know. I don't think about it like that. I have a creative idea first, and I kind of like weigh it in my mind and see if it has merit, if it's producible. I don't think about it from, like, the audience's perspective. You know, I think about it from my own perspective, and, like, I want to do what makes me happy. I don't know. I got the best job in the world. I totally lucked out. So
you seem to have the best job in the world. So, all right, I ask everybody, what's your superpower? What do you do better than other people that's allowed you to have the success that you've had?
I don't know. I think I'm still trying to get good at comedy. I think I have, like, a long way to go to be like, I want to be, like, more comfortable on camera. And, like, I don't have any superpowers yet. I'm still a mere mortal.
You're more than a mere mortal.
I appreciate that. I'm terribly insecure.
Yeah. Any other uncomfortable questions you want to ask me that's going to fuck up my family or my life?
What's the last nice thing you've done for your wife?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding? I'll tell you.
What'd you do on Valentine's Day?
No, not even Valentine's Day.
Can you remember?
Day.
When's her birthday?
When's her, her birthday just passed? May 22nd.
What'd you get?
A couple weeks ago.
Swear to God, that's my girlfriend's birthday, May 22nd.
Shut up.
I bullshit you not. I think I have it on my calendar.
No, I mean, like, you know, you'll see it. You know, we got two kids. It's not about, like, whatever gifts that I can get you. And it's New York. Every fucking store is closed right now. But
I don't want excuses, man. I just want
to tell you. I will tell you. Last night, as every other night at 1 a.m., bring it. The kitchen was destroyed. Your boy was tired. I freaking got off my ass, and I fucking cleaned the entire fucking kitchen.
There we go.
And so when she woke up, it was like spick and span. And like, I try to do that every night. And like, that's kind of I had a conversation with a guy who was like an anti-consumerist. And he said his gift to his wife 1 year for her birthday was, I will take over this chore. I'm not going to give you a thing. I'm going to fucking do this chore that you don't like now on. And I was like, I'm just going to fucking bust out the dishes in the whole kitchen every night, no matter what. And like, not be like, that's not my shit. Like, fuck that. Like,
It feels good when you do them at night and it's all clean in the morning. It's a good feeling.
I mean, you know, you can't leave it for the over fucking night.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
What's the last nice thing you did for your girl?
I did I didn't do the dishes last night, but I cooked. I cooked last night. I cooked her. I did a beer can chicken on the grill.
Thanks so much to Eric for a great interview, and thanks to you for listening, and thanks to our super producers, Britt, Marcus Harkis, Noel, Sam Montes, Jason Reynolds, and Gerville Calais. Torre Show gives you fuel to power your dreams because you can use your dreams like a rocket ship to blast you into a life you never imagined. You can make your dreams a reality, and this show can help. You can find me on Twitter at Torre and on Instagram at Torre Show, and on Patreon at patreon.com/Torre Show. Torre Show is written by me, Torre, and produced by Jackie Garifano. Our editor is Ryan Woodhull. Our photographers are Chuck Marcus and Sean DeCovington. Our booker is Claudia Jean. And we're distributed by DCP Entertainment. And we will be back on Friday and on Wednesday with more amazing guests because the man can't shut us down.